I mean, I think that's what you've got to look at, is when a particular age, when you see a film, and not because the film might be aimed at that age group, but as it strikes you and it will stay with you, and sometimes you keep that in your little heart and you leave it alone. You don't watch it again.
Oh, I'm with you, sister. Let me tell you. I mean, Dave knows this about remakes, etc. I think unless you're really going to do a reinterpretation, reimagining, or whatever, you know, you really do take something away from the original magic.
Aren't those all just words that describe exactly the same thing? This is one of the things I love, this terminology that Hollywood's coming up with, reimagining, reinterpreting,
I must admit, I've borrowed that from Zach and Miri. an erotic reimagining.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Geek Actually, episode 24 for the February 6, 2009. God, that's a mouthful. This show is brought to you by listeners like you. Thank you for your donations. We couldn't do the show without you. And today I am joined, first of all, I am Dave McVeigh, and I am joined by Katrina Smith again. Hello, Katrina.
Hello, lovely to be back.
Back in the studio. And after a long absence, I am also joined...
Abscess, that's something you get in your mouth.
Something like, what's behind my ear? I have a cyst behind my ear. Sorry, I'm getting sidetracked. Sitting to my right...
I got a stroke behind my eye.
...is Jacob Oberman. Welcome back.
Oh, it's nice to be back, Dave.
Now, before we go any further, I've got to just put a disclaimer and say that it's a slightly tech-heavy show today because we have a lot of tech news this week. So, sure. But we also have... Katrina's joining me because we have another one of our rousing...
film reviews.
Not film reviews so much as analysis, I'm sure.
Analysis of the drama behind the camera.
I think so.
And
behind the camera, behind the camera.
Speaking of drama, have we all heard about Christian Bale? I mean, this is all over the news today.
Oh, no, yes. Do share.
All right. Christian Bale apparently was shooting a scene from Terminator Salvation, the latest Terminator film. Mm-hmm. And his director of photography, whose name has escaped me at the moment, walked through the shot. This sent Christian Bale off to use his sort of language, off the fucking planet. Right. He was off the reservation, and he basically berated the director of photography in front of the entire crew for about 4.5 to 5 minutes. Now, I'm just going to play you a little bit of this. We can't play the whole thing because it'll go on forever, but I think we all can have something to say about this in the end. Okay, here we go.
Kick your fucking ass! I want you off the fucking set, you prick! No, don't just be sorry. Think for one fucking second. The fuck are you doing? Are you professional or not?
Yes, I am.
Do I fucking walk around and rip that? No, shut the fuck up, Bruce. Do I want... No! No! Don't shut me up. Am I going to walk around and rip your fucking lights down in the middle of a scene? Then why the fuck are you walking right through? Da-da-da-da like this in the background. What the fuck is it with you? What the...
Have we all had enough of Christian Bale?
The sad thing is...
It goes on, by the way. That is only the first 37 seconds of what looks like about a five... And actually, I was wrong. It actually looks like it's about a five-minute sound clip.
Mm. What happened to his natural accent? Why is he able to berate somebody with an American accent?
I think he's just been over in the States too long. I think it's all started...
Unless he's so in character, he can be cross in character.
No, no. You spend...
You can actually hear a bit of the Welsh coming through. It's not It's not all American.
And Welsh has a bit of American... has a bit of Welsh.
I know that, but I felt that it was the no, it was like, go to your room.
It was just smack on the back of the legs. Acting like a child.
The sad thing is he's now going to be remembered for this forever.
But not only that, this is the second time that this has happened in the last year.
When was the other time?
Went off at his mother or something like that.
He pushed her and he starts wearing an assault charge.
And yeah, there was this issue about this assault. And this is right after Heath had died and all this sort of stuff. And he's sitting there going, what is wrong with this boy?
He's been doing coke. I can tell you now. Aren't you supposed to say
allegedly?
All opinions on this show are the opinions.
No, I'm just telling you. I recognize it just from being in the industry. I reckon he's
He's not had a good year here. He's done this, fantastic film, and he's been usurped by the late Heath Ledger. And I'm sure all the reporters, every time they question him, the first thing they'll ask him about is Heath. So he feels that, you know.
Yeah, but that's not.
But there's still no excuse.
That's him being unprofessional.
To act this way, a professional person would take this gripe up at the end of that shot. Actually, approach him quietly and go, "Mate, I'm sorry. That is not on."
Absolutely.
And that would have been the professional way to do it, away from everyone else.
But you've seen Christian that famous Bale, footage with Lily Tomlin that they play perpetually on television.
No, better than that. Did you see two weeks ago the footage of Julia Roberts?
Sorry.
Just back up. In I Heart Huckabees, they have famous bit of footage where Lily Tomlin is just misbehaving and swearing at the director endlessly, rips into Dustin Hoffman in a car shot, and then finally the director just cracks it. He comes in, he wipes everything off a desk she's sitting at, and he said, "How dare you scream at me? You know, you've been here, you've been unprofessional. I've tried for 4 years to get this movie up," and he continues to scream at her, walks out the room, you can still hear him screaming, and then he comes back, because you know he's coming back for another go.
Nice.
And then you say, "Well, where's the professionalism?" She just pushed him to the limits, and then here we have this. Now, is this a man? I agree with you. I think it's not so much about drugs. I think it's about boundaries.
Mm.
Now, this is the... I don't mind Christian Bale's acting, but this is the strange little man.
Mm.
If you ever saw The Machinist, did you see that?
I actually never saw The Machinist. No.
He
43, 45 kilos for a grown man. Yeah. And then the flip side of weird, he then bulks up to do Batman, and then that's on the set they called him Fat Man because he was so muscular. He'd gone, they called him, he was like a bear.
Yeah.
So then he had to pull back again. Yeah. Now, apart from the fact that I have a health professional background and I'm disturbed about that sort of behaviour and the effect on the body, the other issue is, the guy is about, you know, there's method and there's madness.
Mm.
And I feel that this guy's boundaries are a little bit loose.
Yeah, I would agree with you. It's a gung-ho attitude that, I mean, he's adopted from Robert De Niro, really, because, I mean, he did the same thing with The Raging Bull. Although, you know, he's maintained quiet professionalism, as far as I know, on set at every stage. But having said that, what we're getting an exhibit of, not to get too psychoanalytical on your ass, is the child...
Ass.
I do beg your pardon.
That's right.
Is the child ego state. And once you dip into the child ego state and you regress there, it's hard to pull oneself out once you've actually got there, so to speak.
And
I'm not making an apologia for him. I'm just saying that he goes there a lot. It is a lack of emotional intelligence. I mean, everyone on that set is a team. They are there for him to provide the best that they can. They want the project to
work.
Not
only
as well.
That, the person he is berating is a team leader. He is the person who is in charge of the camera crew. This is no slouch. This man is literally, third or fourth in command.
His name is Bruce. Sorry.
His name is Bruce. But, a DOP is literally like third or fourth in command of a set. Mm. This is not the person you go and yell at you're having a tantrum. Yeah. I mean, when he sits there and he starts going, no, don't say that to me, don't yell at me, it's like, what the hell's wrong with you, you know? It's like you sit there and say, "I'm sorry, what are you doing going through my shot right now?" And if you need to cuss or swear, that's fine.
Yeah.
But you don't just keep going like that.
But see, really the DOP should have said, "Look, I've said I'm sorry." When he said, "I want you off the set," that's a power issue.
Absolutely.
And if he's saying, "I'm now such an A-lister, I can have people flicked," that's a worry.
Well, here's a little adjunct to everything that we've just heard. I heard earlier today that the reason that the camera or the audio still rolled was for insurance purposes.
So, who leaked it? That's what I want to know.
So hang on. So the fact is if he did, really crack the shits and walk off set never to return to the film again, the film company would be able to claim insurance. This indeed did happen with Robert Downey Jr. In fact, in the past couple of films, they've had to take out special insurance related to him actually proving himself again, which he has now done. So that's why they kept rolling.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me. Mm. Also, let's face it, if you were the sound guy and you saw that going on, would you hit stop?
Yeah, no.
No. I'm surprised the cameraman stopped recording.
Well, when the show's over, you should try and pull up that Lily Tomlin footage.
I've just found this. I've been looking for this while we were talking. Mm. This is Julia Roberts. A couple of weeks ago, she actually melted down at some paparazzi. And
is
of course,
just recently.
This is a couple of weeks ago.
But I don't think that's the same thing. And as being a professional on a set.
But she lost her mind because she was so sick of this one particular paparazzi guy.
Yeah.
And of course, she's on camera, and she is the thing about we have to remember here is that she is America's sweetheart, right? And so Julia.
Oh, not since she ripped that chick's husband off. I think she's dropped in sweethearts.
What? Ripped to whose husband?
No. Julia Roberts can get away with almost anything because sugar doesn't melt in her mouth. You know what I mean? She's
butter.
Whatever. Shooting ducks in a barrel, remember?
Oh, mate, I listened to that episode.
All right. It's so fish. The point is, this is Julia Roberts.
Hi, Julia, how are you? You look great today.
Oh, here she comes.
You need to get the fuck out of my face. Do you understand me?
Okay.
You are harassing me.
Sorry about that.
Get the fuck out of my face. You have followed me all over town.
All right.
I have had it with you.
Okay, sorry.
I have your license plate number and your license plate number.
I'm sorry about that.
Fuck off. Aim higher. Get a life. Get away from me.
Sorry about that.
Can you just get away from me? Had it. I'm grading my children right now. You get away from me.
I love the fact that all the way through
things.
She's still in. She's going, get the fuck away from me. He's going, okay, sorry. Yeah. But he doesn't stop the camera.
No,
he just keeps going.
No.
I think stars should have that, anti-fur sort of regime and just have some ready paint spray and then just go
into the lens.
Yeah.
that is a different situation.
Absolutely.
She deserves privacy.
She's not at work.
No, she's
outside her house and she's trying to get her kids
just
into
a little
the
bit
house.
Of decorum there. And the other thing is what's so beautiful about this is she's got such a beautifully trained, such a recognisable voice.
Yes.
So,
her.
It's instantly her and I have to give credit where credit's due. It sounds beautiful. I mean, the way she says fuck off, I mean, it's not some old...
I'd like her to tell me to fuck off. Yeah, that's great. That's fabulous.
Yes, but would you do it or would you stand there and keep...
No, I'd sit there going, okay.
You've been told that you've been told to fuck off by Julia Roberts.
I just sit there going, okay, sorry.
Oh, my God.
Desi Arnaz?
Yes, exactly.
It's very funny. All right, so...
I thought you were going to get tech heavy.
I am. We had to start with the swearing because it was just that Christian Bale story has been like the topic of the day.
Oh, I've been actually working all day, so I've been in a fun zone bubble.
And what the most disturbing
the cone of silence.
The most disturbing thing I found about the entire Christian Bale situation, of course, is that the follow-up to this has come out this afternoon where the DOP has actually come out now with a statement basically saying, I was wrong and Christian was right and I shouldn't have done that. I'm really sorry. Eat humble pie.
And I just think it's wrong that he should have had to do that.
No, he's done the right thing.
He should have had to do
that. I agree. But the guy's done the right thing on so many levels, even though Christian is wrong. The thing is, you don't want it happening again.
And you know what the funny thing is?
This film has to go ahead, and he shouldn't have to eat humble pie, but he's doing it. You know, that way, I mean, if he wants to crack the shits at the sound guy, I mean, they're all wearing Kevlar now, of course.
Yeah, my question is, Mick G, who's the director of Terminator Salvation, as far as I'm concerned, as soon as Christian Bale
cracked it,
the first fuck out of his mouth, why wasn't McGee out of his chair onto that set basically saying, stop, enough?
Well, Mr. McVee. Sorry.
So I don't understand.
I digress.
As the head of that set.
Yes, you're right. He should have been able to pull it and stop it and take it behind closed doors where it should
absolutely
have been.
Absolutely. Say, stop right here. Everything stops. Come with me. Get off the set.
But obviously, the heavies from the studio said, look, here we go. If you play properly, we'll pass you your testicles at the end of the day and you can go home. And that poor DOP, as you say, has had to tug his forelock. And it's wrong.
Yeah, I think it's wrong.
As a
you're
bad
right.
deal.
I think you're right. I think from a political point of view, he did the right thing because this way everything will go. He smooths everything over and he can go back to work, But I just think it's wrong he had to do that. Anyway, that's my 2 cents worth. Christian Bale. Batman, you're not. Let me just tell you. Okay, on to some tech news. Come on. Batman's supposed to stand for what's right.
Tech.
How about this one? Malware distributed by fake parking tickets.
This is amazing.
I love this. All right, according to ZDNet.co.uk, this article came out, basically says a malware infection was propagated through flyers put on windshields in Grand Forks, North Dakota. Basically, these flyers were fake parking violation notices and instructed people to visit a website. It just says once they visited the website, they were infected with malicious browser software. Ha!
Nice.
You know, all I can say is incredibly industrious.
If you ever wanted the definition of chutzpah, that's it.
Absolutely. That's one way. Look, that's one way of taking the malware to the Luddites. Mm. You know, all these people who aren't out there visiting the sites that will normally get them, this is one way of directing traffic to them.
It's evil.
Evil.
That's all right.
This one I liked as well, and I showed you guys the pictures before we started recording. LG Arena KM900 is their latest mobile phone, and it is being considered the most unabashed iPhone lookalike yet. I will actually, for this one, I will post the picture up on the website.
Oh, you should.
Because yes. Or alternatively, yeah. You can go to gizmodo.com. The picture is there.
In actual fact, the link is on the Geek Actually website.
Not yet, but it will.
Gizmodo.
Oh, the Gizmodo website. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Go to Geek Actually.
Can I just say, for the non-technical, if you had to look at this picture and compare it with possibly the iPhone, I think it shares about 98% of the genome.
Absolutely.
I can't understand why Apple hasn't
sued
hard.
I know, it's amazing. From the shape of the case to everything, the only thing that looks different is the fact that the icons are square rather than rounded corners, and it's got the silver trim on it, which the iPhone doesn't have. But it really does look like the same phone. Mm.
And it's the whole same dragging around with your finger bit?
It is. It's all.
Do you like that for the technical people there?
They're dragging around by your fingers. Yeah, the multi-touch screen, but everybody's using multi-touch now.
What it's called?
Multi-touch.
The jigger. The jigger is universal, you know.
I don't know, but yeah. Is it? What's the dragging around with your finger called?
Yeah, that's
multi-touch. Yeah. It's called
multi-touch.
Multi-touch.
Okay.
Multi-touch.
Okay.
Multi-touch.
It's digital.
See,
you got to get close to the mic for that.
I'm helping Mirren while she's not here, being the person who doesn't understand all the technical stuff.
All right, I love this. This was a survey taken out by Microsoft, so it's a bit weighted, okay? But the survey basically said, this is from news.com.au, that says half of Australians, where we are,
yeah,
think that pirated software is okay, which I just love. And you know what? Because we are of our geographical location, I'm sure they just feel like we're so far away it doesn't matter. You know?
I don't like pirated software because I want to be able to complain to somebody when it doesn't work.
And not only that, have you heard the latest? This came out this week, and you're a fellow Mac user, and Jake, you've been kind of out of the loop, so I will bring it up. It was actually last week's news, but I'll bring it up again. A Trojan virus for the Macintosh.
You're joking.
Was actually distributed in a pirate version of the new iWork 09, which went on sale last month.
iWork
is their word processor
presentation. Yes, like
software.
Office.
It's like Office. Yeah. Yeah. Basically, as soon as it went on sale, of course, a pirate version went up on the BitTorrent sites, and people went downloading the pirate version, thinking they were all being very clever. And, of course, embedded in the pirate version of iWork was a Trojan. So literally 10,000 machines or something got hit by this Trojan.
I have a theory.
Which turned the machines into a botnet. So, I think it was Apple, yes.
No, I was just about to
say. Yeah, absolutely.
That is Apple. That's very clever.
I think it's very clever.
See,
it's one way of protecting.
I was thinking you were going to say it was Microsoft.
No, not at all.
Microsoft's
at all.
Interest.
No. The other thing that I was going to suggest, it is possible that David has a theory, and that is, the more popular something becomes.
Absolutely.
They start to attack things, particularly with the iPhone. And when I say they, I'm talking about hackers.
Well, what is so funny is that Macintosh users have been so smug for so long that there have actually been two Trojans in the course of the last month, both in pirated software. Because a Trojan requires you to install it. It doesn't just happen automatically. And Mac users know not to install something. They have to type in your password and everything to install. But if you're installing a piece of software, you have to put in your password. So they download this pirate version of iWork. While it's installing iWork, of course, it's doing everything else at the same time.
Yeah.
And just a couple of weeks before that, a pirated version of Adobe's Creative Suite 3 went out.
Yeah.
Creative Suite 4, sorry. Yeah. Creative Suite 4. And that had a Trojan in it.
Apple's done the right thing.
So
it is Apple.
The other one was Adobe.
Honestly. Because the fact is people who buy Macs are pretty serious about this tool, and they want it to work perfectly because that's what it does. I mean, generally. I would say,
What do you say to his point about the Adobe?
The second one was Adobe, though, not Apple.
Oh.
So it's not necessarily Apple. But it is a concern, and my words of advice are, well, just don't use a pirated version of this software.
Stay pure.
iWork.
Stay to the good side.
Is not like Microsoft Office. iWork only costs $100 and something. It's not like the $400 investment of Office. You know what I mean? So really, it's not that expensive. And if you want to use Office, if you want to use iWork, go out and buy the bloody thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I mean, look, we here at Geek actually advocate, you know, as you say, open source.
That's the software,
go and use open source. What's open source and what's proprietary? You pay for.
Not only that, Open Office or whatever what is the free version? Star Office, Open Office, whatever it's called, is free and it's open source and it's available on Mac. Yep. You don't want to pay for iWork. Use the free one. Use the open source version.
Absolutely.
You know. So there's always alternatives. We don't need to pirate every single thing that walks in the door just because we think it's neat. Now, what this survey actually said was it found 45% regarded pirated software as acceptable in some situations. I love that gray area. In some situations, with the 16 to 24 age group coming in at 64%. So 45% for most, but 64% when you get to the demographic of 16 to 24, which is their key demographic, of course. And they're basically the overwhelming majority feel it's fine to pirate.
Yes, but, you know, they're also the people that are drinking, you know, four-day-old milk that's a bit smelly.
Also,
it's the same metaphor.
This is also
saying, what are you going to put into your lovely fresh Mac? Because it's saying if you cherish it, you will buy the proper gear. You're right.
But
your point is,
that's what I'm saying. Are you a Mac user, Katrina?
She is now. I converted her.
That's actually not true. I did use them in 2000 at work.
Well, I used them in 1999, but that doesn't make you a Mac user now.
No.
All right, so I thought I would just run through a couple of these quickly because a couple of these are just quick off-the-cuff things. This one is from Gizmodo again, and I love this story because I just love the headline. Man arrested for allegedly strangling his girlfriend with a Wii controller. I think this is fabulous. And there's a lovely picture to go with it.
Nice.
Go to Gizmodo, you can see the picture. Hang on.
Oh, thank you. Oh, lovely.
Lovely. Okay, apparently Daniel Alvarez, 21, of Austin, Texas, was recently arrested for allegedly attempting to strangle his girlfriend with a Wii controller. Why did this happen? Apparently because he ate all the cookies. apparently she came home from work. His girlfriend's name was Christina Alvarado. She came home. She found there were no cookies, so she woke him up, basically berating him that there were no cookies. So he got up. They got into a fight, and he allegedly strangled her with the Wii controller.
It is an offense, I think, if you eat all the cookies.
I think so.
That deserves capital
punishment. They actually says here, lessons learned from this. For girls, it says, don't bug your boyfriends when they're sleeping. And for boys, don't eat your girlfriend's cookies, or at least don't strangle her after you've eaten them.
Oh, my God.
So there you go. I think that's actually my favorite text story of the week, because it's just nonsense. I love it. This is just a little one that I thought I found was interesting, and this is actually not relevant to anybody who doesn't use an iPod.
Yeah.
But I do have an iPod, and I just thought this was really interesting, and I'm actually thinking about looking into this. Now, I don't know if we can do this from Australia.
What's that?
Apparently, you can actually upgrade. Now, I have... Oh, no, I don't have it on me. The older iPods, the iPod Classics. I know your sister, actually.
Yes.
Katrina has an iPod Classic. I have an iPod third generation, fifth generation, the 5G, the 30-gig iPod video. Apparently, you can actually... there is a company now that is upgrading the hard drives.
Excuse me?
They're upgrading the hard drives.
How are they doing that?
Because they've got little hard drives, little micro hard
drives. Yeah, I understand that.
And what they're doing is they're offering a service where they'll actually replace the hard drive in it with a third-party hard drive.
Wait a second.
You want to make sure it's off warranty first.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're
going to breach
warranty.
But my iPod is now 2.5 years old, so it's way off warranty.
So it's like a little external hard drive.
It already is. So what they want to do, though, is they crack the case, take out the little hard drive that's in there, which is what stores all your music.
Yeah.
In my case, it's a 30 gig. Your sister's is probably 80 gig because it's a more recent one. And they're saying they can replace it with up to 240 gigabytes.
Wow.
So that's pretty sweet.
Now, much like a car that you soup up, I mean, a car has specifications. You're not meant to, go beyond those.
Heat would be a factor.
Heat is a factor, and battery power, battery usage would also be a factor.
Yeah, I think battery power would be a major factor, but the iPod, I don't know about the Classic, but my iPod fifth generation actually lasts for hours as it is. So even if you took an hour off that as an impact on running that hard drive, you're still getting, I'd get easily 8 hours off of that thing, you know. So, and I'm sure.
And what? And hypothetically, the refreshing process with your Mac supposed to be not affected in any way?
Well, no, because you're not actually changing the basic software. They're just changing the hard drive. They're just changing the hard drive. Mm. So just physically putting a different capacity drive inside the machine. What they're saying, though, and it was interesting, somebody actually wrote on the comments field, which I didn't print out, but in the comments that went along with this, some of them were actually saying, wow, this is actually pretty sweet because you could use it in your home theater. Put a 240-gig hard drive into it, load it with movies, and plug in the AV cable and plug that straight into your TV set. You could literally have a little video player that would hold a substantial number of video rather than, at the moment, you can only load it with so many videos because it's got a small hard drive. Well, I don't know about the 80 gig, how many that can hold, but the 40 gig that I've got, or 30 gig I've got, sorry, only holds, once you've taken into account music and everything else, you only get a couple of movies.
Well, what's a movie worth?
Depends on what it's encoded depends on how big it is. Okay. Yep. There's a lot of factors. I just put a movie on my iPhone that I actually encoded. So I re-encoded, and I encoded at a slightly higher quality level, but it was almost a gig.
Yeah, that sounds about right. A TV episode is usually about 350 meg.
That's using DIVX, though.
And DIVX.
But DIVX doesn't work on an iPhone. Half hour, an hour TV show.
Half hour shows are about 178 megs, but using DIVX. Using H.264, which is what the iPhone iPods use, I'm not sure what that calculation
probably
is.
Amount,
it's probably about the same, really? Actually. It's probably about the same.
Okay.
Tell me something. You have to remember.
But it's a very interesting article, and you might want to pass that on to Robin. Hi, Robin.
Hello, loving sister.
Not until her warranty is out, though.
Okay.
Right. And also, we need to look into it because it may not be valid in Australia.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Gizmodo is an American site. This is from the Gizmodo American site.
No, I've looked at the Gizmodo site.
But Gizmodo, if you just go to Gizmodo by default, it will actually location you to Australia. The American site's actually better. There's more information on it.
Mr. Carter. Mr. Carter. Shame my age. Look, a friend of mine in Melbourne has shown me this new connector, which is essentially like a... I've forgotten the name of it, but it's a like the connector that they use for a hard drive.
Like a SATA?
Yeah, that's it.
eSATA.
eSATA.
It's a little red cable.
Unbelievable. This machine's
got internal internal SATA drives. So.
Wow. Because he was actually... He has a film night called Time Capsules, which is in Melbourne, and once a month. Fantastic film night. Anyway, he was ripping a disc, and this was through eSATA. Just boom.
Yeah, but ripping a disc is also dependent on the speed of the drive, the data transfer rate. There's a lot of factors. It's not just the SATA cable.
I understand.
Because once you're doing something like ripping a disc, and we don't encourage
But hang on, this is for a film festival.
Makes no difference. This is actually a very interesting point. Let's bring this up because we always talk about censorship and we always talk about rights and all this sort of stuff. Are you aware? And this is going to be interesting, I think, for our international listeners, are you aware that ripping a disc, whether it's DVD or ripping a CD to your iTunes library, in Australia is illegal? Mm-hmm. There is no provision in the Australian copyright law.
For private use.
No provision in the Australian law that allows you to copy a disc for any reason.
Yeah, it's blanket.
It is blanket. Yeah, in America, there is a clause in the copyright clause that says there is a clause in the copyright law that actually says you may make one copy for personal backup.
Yep.
Which is how they get away with iPods and stuff like that, because you're ripping one copy to your iTunes library.
When you hypothetically bought it.
You've bought it and you copy it to your iTunes and so you still own the disc.
Yeah,
right?
But what about when a person has multiple Macs that are licensed off their iTunes? So does that mean that every copy...
Well, see,
so computers licensed off your iTunes, that you're allowed to have three one copies.
That's some music that's purchased from the iTunes store. Mm. That's under its own EULA or end user license agreement, which actually says you can actually have up to five Macs. So you're allowed to have up to five computers.
So why should that be different from films or so on?
Because in Australia, in Australia, that when you actually buy the music from iTunes. Mm. You're agreeing to that end user license agreement, and when you actually purchased it, that is what you've agreed to.
Yep.
When you buy a CD, you're not agreeing to that end user license agreement. That when you buy a CD, you are actually going by the rules laid down by digital media on a recorded format. Okay? And in that situation, there is absolutely blanket law in Australia that says you are not allowed to copy that. Right?
So don't rip it.
As soon as you rip it and put it on your iPod, you've actually broken the law. But this is the same law, mind you, that says it is actually illegal to record broadcast television. Mm. So all the VHS players out there,
and the
every
DVD
single thing,
hard drives.
Every single thing that you actually record off television is actually illegal.
Yep.
Right. This is, I mean, this is where our copyright law really needs to be adjusted a little bit, because there isn't a person around that isn't making copies of their albums for whatever purpose, whether they're putting it onto cassette to put into their own Walkmans.
I was going to say, in the '70s, we all need to go to jail.
That's right. And we all used to make mixtapes.
And what
all
about
this
when
sort of
you
stuff.
Had the little microphone at the Countdown show on Sunday night?
Oh, now you're
not
showing
sure,
your age.
Not sure,
no, no, no,
but
no,
never.
Been, on Australian TV, for international listeners, they do show old episodes of Countdown.
They do.
Don't
it,
they?
Was, yeah. It started, I think, in 79, finished something like 84, and it was,
Countdown?
In fact, Countdown.
No, Countdown. 76? Countdown started in 1975.
Well, but I was just going to say, for our international listeners, it's sort of a Daggy equivalent of Soul Train.
And, yeah, a little bit, yeah.
And the English show, which is the Grey Whistle Test.
Yes.
Which you can get on DVD now, which is just
And
wonderful.
Do we all remember the theme? Countdown!
Countdown!
Ripley Studios in Melbourne, yes.
Oh, and Molly Meldrum, who actually went to the States a few years ago and was declined at the border and sent home.
What?
Did you hear about this? This was several years ago. He actually went to America to interview somebody. I can't remember
but
who he was going to interview.
He'd been to the US before.
Yeah, absolutely. But he showed up at US Customs.
Without a visa.
And he didn't have a visa because, of course, we have the visa waiver system. But he was
but
going...
That's changed
but
now.
He was
you
going,
can just...
No. He was going on business because he was going to interview. And they recognized him as who he was, and they knew he was going to interview somebody, and they said, where's your business visa? Because he was going on business, and he didn't have a visa because he just assumed he could go on the waiver.
I wouldn't have known that myself.
And they turned him around, and they put him on a plane
on
and
a plane.
Sent him home.
That's awful.
With a smacked bum.
That's awful.
Break the law. The Americans don't take light to this stuff.
Oh,
I tell you.
Jokes made at customs there.
No, they're scanning your thumbprint.
No.
All right, so the
retina
the,
scan now.
The lead up, by the way, for this whole copyright thing and why we're talking about why you shouldn't be copying discs is because a huge story broke over this last week. Now, it actually broke just before I recorded last week's episode, but I forgot. That's why I didn't bring it up. But I'll bring it up this week. For those who don't know, because a lot of people already know this, because those who are in the know and are buying the music, though, they've probably already seen this. As of January, iTunes went DRM-free. Now, we did mention this in the show a few episodes ago.
Yes.
They were going. This is one of the big announcements that did.
Kind of on the cards, wasn't it?
It was. They've been having their asses kicked recently, because in America, all the record labels have basically been saying to all the other MP3 downloads, including Amazon, of course you can do DRM-free music. And iTunes would say, can we take the DRM off now? And they say, no, you can't. And so basically the record labels have been bitch-slapping Apple because they...
Yeah,
because
Apple's taking away their
For the plebs, DRM-free...
Digital rights management.
It's basically copy protection.
This is why
which
music,
you can get around. I won't go into it.
You can. All you have to do is burn it to a CD and then re-rip it back, and you've literally stripped the copy protection off.
Yep.
But for those who just keep their music in digital format, which is what you're meant to do, the digital rights management means that this is how they monitor the not registered to more than 5 computers.
Right.
If you try and play it on a machine that it's not registered to, it won't allow you to play it. Now, iTunes, the way iTunes got the whole library working, how they talked the music industry into doing the digital download music, how they managed to get all this working, was they came up with a digital rights management system called Fair Play. And this meant that the music when sold on iTunes could only be played on iPods. It couldn't be copied back from an iPod. It could only be copied to an iPod, et cetera, et cetera. They sent all these guidelines. It was a raging smash success, and iTunes has become the number one retailer of music in the world.
Right.
Okay, I mean, if not, it's very close.
Fait accompli.
It's amazing.
You're reaching so many people instantaneously.
Absolutely, and it's fast, and it's easy to navigate and everything else. And 128 kilobit encrypted DRM music sounds great in iPod headphones. It's, you play it on a big stereo system with your big Mondo speakers, and it's not the best. But through your iPod speakers, it sounds perfectly acceptable. Anyway, for the last year or so, or even a little bit longer, everybody's been bitching and complaining because they really think the DRM is the death of the music industry, because, of course, people are saying there's too many restrictions, right? We need to be able to use it on our different devices and our phones and our this and our
You've
that.
You've been watching a lot of Rome, haven't you? And I just have to say for the listeners, David's arms are flailing about. Anyone who's seen Rome, you know, the arms are up like this when they're talking. I've got my left and
right. What's he say? He says, salve.
Salve. Yeah. Roman bread made by Romans for Romans.
If you haven't seen Rome, it's a wonderful series. It is available
seasons,
on DVD.
HBO. It's incredible.
It's fabulous. And Jake, when I first said I was watching Rome and I literally glutted on Rome, literally one episode after another, and watched the whole thing.
You gutsed it.
And I gutsed it, as you would say. And I said to Jake, I'm watching Rome. He goes, I didn't really like Rome. I never got into it.
No, I never said that. I said I'd seen a small part of an episode, and it didn't grab you. What was shown to me didn't grab me at the time.
Yeah, and I said, give it another try and watch it. So he had another go at the DVDs, and oh my God, I've never seen anybody so obsessed.
I gutsed it. And
next to me, I've never seen anybody so obsessed.
I had a permanent Woody for a long time.
It's a very good show. It's
I think
excellent.
They call that priapism. Anyway, I digress. Sorry.
Anyway, back to DRM. Sorry. You digressed. Sorry. Back to DRM.
We need Mirren in here.
Well, no, yes, she'd yell at us. Yeah. All right, so what has happened is that even Apple basically came out and said, we want DRM taken off. And the record companies basically said no. Now, to give a bit of history to this, the record companies don't really like iTunes. They don't really like Apple because they don't feel that they have any control over their music, right?
They don't.
They don't. And basically iTunes has completely reinvented the way people buy music, and the record companies are nervous about all this. So they don't really like the fact that iTunes has this enormous monopoly. So they want to create some competition. Along comes Amazon and a couple of other companies that basically say, we're going to start MP3 stores for all these mobile players. And the record companies say, sure. And they allowed them to release much higher quality DRM-free MP3 files. In fact, 256 kilobytes.
So they were creating a reverse monopoly.
Absolutely. They were basically creating competition for iTunes. And one of the things that the record companies wanted was variable pricing. iTunes sold all tracks at 99 cents.
Yep. Which was good.
It was, but the record companies really wanted variable pricing so that they could have more control.
How can they quantify it, though? Can they say, look, we're going to charge you $2.99 because this is a higher quality recording?
Well, funny you should say that. What's finally happened is that Apple has finally agreed to give them variable pricing. There's three price points. Mm. Basically, what they've done is they've allowed the older catalog to go cheaper, so you can now get older music and the classics and stuff much cheaper, and they've raised the price on some of the new releases to like $1.20 or $1.30, right, instead of 99 cents. The reward for this is that the companies have now said, go ahead and release your DRM-free music. And so Apple went DRM-free. They call it iTunes Plus, and all the tracks are now 256 kilobits, and they are DRM-free, and they sound fabulous, and it's just terrific. Where this came to the forefront was, what Apple said was, you can upgrade all the music that you've bought from us for this little discounted price, right? And so when you go to iTunes, it would say, upgrade your music. And when you click on it, it shows what albums you've bought and the upgrade price, which is generally like, you know, 20% of the original.
Is that Genius thing?
No, Genius is a playlist creator.
Yes,
anyway, so I looked at this, and the first thing that struck me about this, and Leo Laporte went on in this in his podcast, is it says, here's all the albums you've bought, the upgrade price is.
Yeah.
Blanketly, you had to upgrade everything at once. You couldn't just upgrade the ones you wanted.
Oh, that's lousy.
And as Leo Laporte said, something didn't occur to me because everything in my iTunes that I purchased I still have, but he actually bought a Regis Philbin album for an article that he was writing years ago, and he deleted the album since then. He didn't want it. But, of course, with this upgrade, he didn't have it anymore, but because it was in his purchase history, it was included in that upgrade.
And you couldn't amend your
and
purchase history.
And you couldn't amend it. It was all or nothing. And so, of course, he was up for like $300
that's
in upgrade.
That's anti-competition. I mean, well, it's not... It's
you know what? It's a really clever move from Apple. Yeah. They say, sure, here it is. Now you get, you know, we get all this extra money from you. Anyway, the reason why this is news is because at the beginning of the week, Apple allowed you to buy isolated.
Oh.
So it's now changed. So all those people who were the early adopters who said, oh, I can upgrade everything, and they just clicked that button and spent hundreds of dollars, if you'd waited literally a week...
There.
It is now available. there. You can now buy them. You actually have the per album price per next to each one, and you can upgrade the ones you want and not upgrade the other ones. So if you'd waited a little bit, you could actually do it. You know what? There's a saying in technology. There's leading edge, and there's bleeding edge.
Nice.
Okay? You can be leading edge, but if you're going to be really, really, really leading edge, you're going to be bleeding edge, right? Because you're going to run into the bugs, you're going to run into the problems, all right? Yep. So,
it's par for the course.
I'm a bleeding edge person.
Yep.
I like to sit right with the newest thing.
Yep.
Right? But I know what I'm doing, and if something goes wrong, I can usually get myself out of trouble.
Yeah.
For those who don't know what they're doing or are shaky on it at all, I would say...
Hang back.
Always give it a little bit of time. Don't run out and buy the latest thing as soon as it comes out, but because you're going to have problems.
I mean, you're talking about the past 5,000 years in manufacture. I mean,
I'm sure the first wheel was not a raging success.
No, I'm sure it wasn't either. Now, listen, this is a perfect segue. I was listening to the show from a couple of shows ago, and you mentioned a delicious library.
Oh, I use it. I use it religiously.
I know you do, and you've shown it to me. But you made mention that... Is it a rumor? I mean, I couldn't find anything on it. Is there going to be an app for the iPhone?
So funny you bring this up.
Do you know
this
about
up.
This, Katrina, the delicious library?
No.
This is lovely. It is a video library, which you can have on your Mac, and you can catalog all of your films with the David's about to show you.
I'm just firing it up on the Mac now. So.
It's a
Mac 10.
There it is.
4 and later only.
Yeah.
Have a look at the beautiful wooden shelves.
So you get
the video library.
But is it wooden or is it Laminex on
chipboard? Laminex. Nice. Well spotted, Katrina. Your style.
It's beautifully laid out. And it will support all
there
your stuff.
There you go. Isn't that lovely?
Here's all your movies, right?
I mean, it's really geeky.
You click on whatever you want. So here's Angel, for instance. So we click on Angel. And basically it's cooked into Amazon. So you want to add a new entry, you hit the plus button, type it in, and it brings all the details off of Amazon.
It's beautiful.
You know, it's nice when you go along in a video shop to rent a DVD. You always have to have your head on the side like a little cockatoo, because you have to look at the side of it. And for those of you who can't see this, you actually have the DVDs are the right way up, and you don't have to put your head on the side.
I like that. But the cockatoos do have eyes on the side of their head.
And one of the things I really like, you can create your smart shelves. These are smart shelves. So basically I created a category.
Cool.
So this smart shelf is called Action.
Yes.
So every film that has action in its genre, when I click on there, that's what comes through.
Yeah.
And so I can now shorten it down, and then, of course, I can search even further.
Nice.
You've got your – and the other thing I love with this, one of the cleverest thing I love, is when you buy a new DVD, it actually has a barcode reader.
Oh, yeah?
The actual iSight camera in your Mac becomes a barcode
reader.
You click on the little camera, and there's your barcode reader, and you just scan
That's perfect
the barcode.
That's perfect for the iPhone.
So
if they do make this app for the iPhone.
Can you run your cat or dog past that, and they can pick up their chip?
I don't know. But what's really neat is it's not just movies. You can actually – it actually has the facilities in it. You can put in hardware, books, music, anything.
Dave, are they going to do it?
Okay, now this is – I actually heard the guy who wrote this program was actually on Mac Break Weekly.
Oh, really?
About a month ago, actually, I think it was. And on that show, he said, I am writing the iPhone app.
He is.
And what will happen is it's supposed to be VPN'd or virtual private networking, and basically you'd have a version of it on your iPhone which networks via your LAN to this.
And you'd be able to zoom in and access it
from your iPhone, which for me, I want it downstairs.
Yeah.
I don't always want to have to take my laptop downstairs to find my films.
Yep.
I have an extensive library, and I have things filed in boxes and all sorts of stuff. So I'd like to be able to say, where is something? Bring up my iPhone, type it in, and there it is.
Can I criticize your titles of your categories? You've got action, but I think as a subgenre, you should really have Where Shit Blows Up. Because friends and I will, you know, sometimes you just need to see a movie where lots of shit blows up. And that's actually beyond.
More and more, Katrina, I really do. I think you're pushing the right buttons. I was just about to say, you know, in regards to the cockatoo, I actually like doing the cockatoo. Because the fact is you can always put a sound effect with it, which is you look up and say, hey.
He's particularly also clock heads with another person with their head down
Let me regain control here for a minute. All right, so to finish the delicious library story, which actually was not on my list of stories, but you brought it up. He said that he was writing this iPhone app. I got all excited by this and thought, yay. And best off, he said it was going to be free.
And I thought, this is fabulous.
Because, of course, it would be free because it's not a standalone. It requires delicious library to really run, right? Since I heard that article, not a word. I can't find anything on the net about it. I can't find anything about him developing it.
Well, I went to look. I went to look
forums. I've been into the Delicious Library forums. Nowhere can I find any information about this. So I don't know whether it's finished, whether he's still writing it, whether it's just waiting for approval by the iTunes Store, which is notoriously long. All these things, and I don't know. And I'm anxiously waiting for this app on my. And now I don't. Jake knows I am a mad app collector on my iPhone. I have like 9 pages of apps on my iPhone.
Now, I believe there's the iFart.
I haven't.
I haven't heard
What's
it yet.
What's an iFart do?
It's just a sound effects generator.
Yes. Oh, right. Yes.
Now, the funny thing is, I actually got the iFart to have a listen to because this has caused a bit of a stir. You've heard about this, haven't you? This became the number one app on the App Store.
Of course it
was.
Did.
But it was originally, you paid for it.
People have an anal sense.
But it was originally a 99 cent app.
Was it?
And it made a fortune. Wow. And now, of course, it's free.
Wow.
So now the guy's released it for free. And it is actually not great sound effects or anything else. It's incredibly juvenile. It's incredibly juvenile and everything else. But,
yeah.
And I feel so terrible saying this, I can't help but laugh every time I play
David,
it.
David, where is
it's
the phone?
It's downstairs. We'll get it later and I will show you. But my son, who is 9, and you can imagine.
Yeah.
He sits there and hits the buttons on it, making the sounds, and just laughs hysterically.
the beauty is you whack the volume right up and you're on a bus or you're in an office.
Unfortunately, they're not incredibly realistic, but there are a couple that are incredibly funny.
Nice.
Because it's all different. Yeah. For lack of a different word, they're all different flavors. Right?
Oh, my God.
Nice. So, but there's actually one sound effect in particular.
I'll make sure my mouth's open.
Oh, don't. Oh, my God.
I must say, there is one, for those who don't know, Jacob and I went to high school together, and there is actually
and
one.
And they're still there.
Yeah. We're still there. Yeah. There's one of the, there's, I think, 14 different versions, and there is one, I think it's number 9, in fact, that every time I hear it,
you just
reminds me of Jake. Because it's a sound, not that you used to
close,
fart, it's
aren't
a sound you used to make with your mouth in high school.
Always.
And as soon as I heard it, I went, oh my God, that sounds exactly
Can
like what Jake
it?
Used to
do.
Unfortunately, I can't because I have a 2-day growth. And it prevents.
Is he sporting the George Michael?
Believe it or not, this sound effect is so intricate for Jake. Yes. It actually requires 2 hands.
Yeah, it requires 2 hands.
And a clean shaven face.
I tell you what, our colleague, Ralph, who also went to school with us, he also had a 2-hander.
That's true, he did.
Can you promise the listeners that you'll come clean-shaven next time and do it?
There's a challenge for
it's
you.
It's possible.
Okay.
And if not, I'll have the iPhone app here.
we'll have a fart off.
All right, I'm going to move us away from tech. I actually have a couple more, but you know what? We're running out of time. We are just chit-chatting away. So look, here's my tech news over my shoulder.
Okay. Nice.
I just want to throw a couple of film bits of news out there, and then we have a feature review, Katrina and I.
Excellent.
But a couple of bits of film news. Now, I printed this out, and can you believe how small that text is?
That's about 9 font for people in the boondocks.
All right, I'm needing a magnifying glass.
9 font?
That's less than
like
that.
Like point 0.3 font. Right. What's with Larry Moe?
I'm going to get to that. All right, here we go. Now, Jacob, this one really is for you. They are going to make a Three Stooges movie.
Oh, God, help me.
I'm going to swear.
They weren't
funny
the first
time. Yeah, I was just about to say, I'm going to swear now. Which fucking idiot came up with that?
The Farrelly brothers.
Oh, God.
Okay, now, not only are the Farrelly brothers planning on making a Three Stooges movie, are you ready for.
Farrelly or Farrell?
Farrelly.
But they've made
Farrelly.
Some funny films.
They have. Yeah.
Did they do the Conjoined Twins one?
Yes, and they also did this Something About Mary, and they did Kingpin. And they did Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah.
And they recently did The Heartbreak Kid.
They're hit
Ben
and
Stiller
miss.
Film.
They're hit and miss.
Didn't see that one.
No.
Now, the interesting thing about this story, and you know I'm not a big fan of remakes at the best of times, and I actually have 2 remake stories today, but this one is, I don't know whether it's a biopic or they're just trying to do Three Stooges, or there's no details about that. In fact, it's still kind of rumor and innuendo whether this is actually happening, but this kind of substantiates a little bit. But the thing that I thought, this thing is so small, I've got to take my glasses off. Hold on. Here we go. This print is so small here. The casting is what got me.
Oh, no.
Are you ready for this? Yeah. How about Johnny Depp?
No. He's not going to do it. He wouldn't do it.
And Sean Penn as Larry.
No, Sean Penn wouldn't do that.
Now, either. The reason why there has now been some credence to this is the fact that Film Drunk, which is a website, has a source who says Billy West, who is a famous voice actor from Futurama and Ren and Stimpy, is meeting with Sean Penn today and tomorrow to help him prep his Larry impression.
But don't you remember, I think Johnny Depp is obsessed with the whole Buster Keaton sort of era.
This isn't Buster Keaton
was good. This is crap. Didn't like him the first time around.
No, absolutely.
The bottom line is this. I don't doubt that Johnny Depp would do this, because Johnny Depp picks some pretty weird-ass projects. My question is, looking at this picture of Mo, do you really think Johnny Depp can play this part?
Well, actually, having just recently on TV seen Blow and his interesting wig work as the drug dealer, he only had to make it a couple of shades darker brown and he was there.
Maybe.
Show me again. Look, he could. I feel sorry for him.
They need to put it down, they need to walk away, and they need to not make eye contact with this film project.
The Farrelly Brothers, F-A-R-R-E-L-L-Y, so you pick your
Farrelly.
Own... Farrelly. Farrelly, Farrelly, whatever. You pick your own pronunciation.
You don't suddenly make them Italian. They're Farrelly.
It's a hoax. It's got to be a hoax.
I don't doubt it.
It's got to be a hoax. You doubt that it's a hoax?
No, I doubt that it's a hoax. It's the sort of thing that they would do.
No, David, let's talk about proper films.
All right, here's another one for you. Jacob, this is from our era.
Right.
Oh, God. Remember Tron?
I love Tron.
I do.
Well, Tron 2 is on the way.
Wait a second. Tron 2.
Tron 2, there's the logo for you.
You know the evil computer? They rebooted.
No.
It's based on
the MCP, yeah.
I have no idea what the story is.
Well, David Warner is still alive.
Okay, the story is incredibly guarded as a secret. I do know, we mentioned this on the show a couple of weeks ago, that 13, Olivia Wilde, is that her name, from House? The television is in it. She's been cast. She's going up to Canada to start shooting in February. I think it's this month they're starting to film.
Tell me Jeff Bridges.
Jeff Bridges is in it. Bruce Boxleitner is in it.
Really?
They brought them both back. God. What's interesting, and the reason why I brought this up, we've actually mentioned this in a previous show with the fact that there has been leaked footage from Comic-Con that showed up online a few months ago, which showed an older Jeff Bridges. This caught my eye today, though, in the news, which actually says that Jeff Bridges has been sent to Canada to get digitized, so that Disney can create a younger digital clone of the actor for Tron 2. I'm very curious about this.
That's more expensive than Botox.
So I'm very curious. Apparently they're saying that this is not an unusual procedure for video games to get an actor digitized for that. And if they're going to show flashbacks or something, they're going to need a younger Jeff Bridges.
That's for sure.
So what they're saying is...
Because now these days he looks like the Big Lebowski.
What they're wondering is they're saying, will they use Jeff Bridges to do motion capture, basically, and then superimpose it onto another actor that is on
set? Did you see Tron when it came out, Katrina?
Yeah, I loved it.
I mean, the initial story...
It's a lovely film.
It was a lovely film, but let's face it, the initial story was a little bit tissue thin, and I don't see how you're going to spin it into a sequel, unless, like, he gets sucked back into the computer again.
Yeah.
You know, there was some beautiful analogies in terms of, you know, are you the user and the whole godlike thing. And
well, it's a pre-Matrix sort of situation,
isn't it? Also about, you know... You know, there were some beautiful, beautiful themes, and I won't waste time talking about it, but I just think, yes, it was a beautiful film, and I think it was so cutting edge for its day,
but I do not know
where they're going to go with the story.
This is the thing. You talk cutting edge, but the fact is the majority of Tron, and that's 1982, is hand-painted by Taiwanese artists. There are vector. Computer vector was hand-painted. Yeah.
There's actually... If you get the DVD that's available, the two-disc edition that came out, the special features, the documentary on the making of Tron is phenomenal.
I'd love to see it.
Because they actually talk about the techniques that they did. The fact that all of the vector graphics that were encoded for the film were all hand-coded, and they actually had no idea what they'd look like until they were actually processed, rendered, sent back to them, and so they had to do it all by numbers.
Incredible.
So they would write thousands of lines of code, send it off, because they didn't have home computers back then.
Nope.
And they're saying everything in Tron can be done on a home computer now.
Wow.
So 1982 Tron, they're saying they could create the entire film on one desktop machine now.
I'm sure.
But back then, all the blue lighting on it, basically they wore monochrome costumes, they wore black and white costumes, and they shot the entire film in front of black velvet.
Yep.
And then what they would do is, and Jeff Bridges actually talks about the fact that it was a surreal experience, because they would spend all day in this black room, basically, this black velvet room.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the day, they'd kind of walk out into the sunshine, and it's like, hey.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
they're stuck the in this
work.
Black velvet room the whole time. And they were literally, they would then send all that off to Korea to have the
Taiwan.
Taiwan, sorry, to have the hand painting of all the little blue lights.
And let me tell you something, in the credits, I'll never forget the credits the first time I saw it. There are thousands of hand painters.
And let's face literally, it, they literally, all had occupational overuse syndrome.
Yeah.
And no claims to be able to be made.
Yeah. Fabulous film. All right, here's another one for you, for the geeks out there. Green Lantern is very close to being made.
Oh, yes.
You know, by darkness, light, blah, 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 you know, the one with the ring.
Yep.
It looks like Martin Campbell, who directed some of the James Bond films, including Casino Royale, is very interested in directing Green Lantern.
Who's the named star for
None yet. It's still in development at this point. Ooh. But what is interesting is there is another superhero. Do we all remember, now it's a little bit beyond us because it was actually, we were very small children when it came out, but we all saw it in repeats, I'm sure. Green Hornet.
Oh, yes.
With
Bruce Lee, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay, a big screen adaptation of Green Hornet has been in the works for quite some time now. Now, interestingly enough, one of the most bizarre twists in casting I think I have seen in the last few years is Seth Rogen.
Excuse me?
Seth Rogen is going to play Green Hornet.
Excuse me?
Apparently he's been buffing up, he's been
losing weight. I was
going to
say,
is he going to become Asian?
No, the Green Hornet himself is white. His sidekick, Kato.
Oh, was he the cursor?
Who was
the original Green Lantern?
I can't remember the actor's name. I've got IMDb right here.
That speaks volumes, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, he was forgettable.
That's
right. It was Bruce Lee's show.
Green Hornet, I mean, he's svelte. I mean, Seth Rogen's.
The interesting thing is Seth Rogen has written it. Yeah. Him and his writing partner of Pineapple Express and Superbad.
Did you enjoy the Pineapple Express?
I'm sorry, I have not seen that film.
Okay.
That particular film, I heard you talk about films the other day.
Anyway, so Seth Rogen wrote it with his writing partner Goldberg, and he was going to star as Green Hornet. And the director and Kato had been cast, same person. Stephen Chow, who did Kung Fu Hustle. Did you see Kung Fu Hustle?
No.
Kung Fu Hustle, probably the most outrageous martial arts film to come out in the last 10 years. The thing is like a live-action Warner Brothers cartoon. It was hysterically funny, full of visual effects, and Stephen Chow is a very funny guy and a martial artist, and he was cast to play Kato and direct Green Hornet because he directed Kung Fu Hustle.
Right.
He's directed a few films. Recently, though, it's hit a snag. Apparently, Stephen Chow turned around a few weeks ago and said, I need to pull out as director. I'll still play Kato, but I need to pull out as director because I've got other commitments. So he pulled out. So he'll still play Kato. Okay, we're still a go-ahead at this point looking for a director. Then a couple of weeks ago, Stephen Chow turned around and said, actually, I can't play Kato now. I got to move on. I got other things to do.
What?
So, of course, this project basically sat in limbo, and they said, is it dead? What's going on? Well, it came out yesterday on the feeds from comingsoon.net that apparently Seth Rogen is still moving ahead with this project and a new director is being signed imminently. We don't know who it is at this point, but apparently they are going to go ahead with this project and he is quite keen on doing it. The other director who was attached to Green Hornet, just on a side note, before Stephen Chow, was Kevin Smith.
Oh, really?
He was attached to it for a while. So Kevin Smith was Clerks and Chasing Amy.
So there is a hint of comedy about that.
I have a feeling it's a bit of a ham
job for sure. I mean, Seth Rogen.
We'll be waiting to see. I'm still waiting more details. At this point, we're not even sure if it's going to go ahead.
Yeah.
All right, last one.
Quickly, talking about superheroes. Okay. You showed me, and let me tell you, Katrina, this is the most amazing trailer I've seen in a long, long time, and I hope it actually lives up to, the film lives up to it. What's happening with The Watchmen? When does that come out?
The trailer is awesome. Cool. We've talked about it a lot. We actually talked about it on the show 2 weeks ago, or was it last week?
Is it going to be a worldwide release?
It's a worldwide release. Wow. There was actually doubt about its release because there was that big legal battle. We've actually discussed this on the show already.
Yeah,
Fox turned around and said that they actually owned the distribution rights. Warner Brothers had already made the film. They had to go to court. There was threat that Fox was actually going to take the film from Warner Brothers and do what they wanted with it, and it was all very messy while. But it has all now been settled.
Settled out of court
for an undisclosed amount of money and a little bit of kickback from the actual box office. And
they know this is going to be good. That's what the you don't fight like that unless you know something's going to be
and
hot.
Fox does not have a great reputation with this genre. So they know that, and there was a lot of backlash in the boards that were basically saying if Fox takes this over, the people are going to boycott the film. So it's
people
all...
don't boycott films.
Oh.
They will sneak in there. If they are true fanboys and fangirls, they will say, ah, I'm not going to see that.
I give you one film that would argue that point, which is, it was also a terrible film, but a novel that has an enormous number of fans was Battlefield Earth. Now, Battlefield Earth had message boards all over the place when it was being produced, and everybody was saying this is going to be the most epic film ever made and all this sort of stuff, and I had a friend who was like almost rabid, foaming at the mouth, waiting for this film, and of course when the film came out, 6 months before the film came out, all the backlash started about the Scientology aspect of it because Travolta was producing it and starring in it, and there was rumors going around saying that if you weren't a Scientologist, you couldn't work on it, and you know, and all this sort of stuff, and it backlashed so bad that nobody went to see that film. We didn't even have enough people to go see it to actually say it was a bad film, and it was. It's actually all going to be on the Gloriously Wonderful Bad list, let me just tell you. But it was, the backlash was so bad, nobody went to see it. Mm. It made about $1.95 at the cinema.
Yep.
You know? Boycotts do work. When never underestimate fanboys. Fanboys, when fanboys get upset, they get really upset.
No, I'm not underestimating. I mean, look at how much work and groundwork they had to do when Hugh Jackman was being Wolverine. You know, they had to make sure people were happy. They had to go to all the comic cons. They had to make sure that they urinated in all the right pockets so that everybody felt included and had ownership.
How quaint.
All right. I just want to throw out one more. One of my favorite directors of all time who unfortunately hasn't made some great choices in film for his last couple of films, but is responsible for some of my all-time favorite films. John Carpenter is finally making another film.
After a hiatus of how long?
Several years now. He's basically been in self-imposed retirement. Mm. He felt that he really had nothing more to do, and he kind of retired.
What's he been brought out for?
He's coming out. He's gotten excited about a film called The Ward. W-A-R-D, the ward, like a hospital ward, and it basically says that it's about a young woman trapped in a mental institution with a malevolent ghost.
Malevolent
ghost.
I'm sorry, I apologize.
No, that's all right. Correct me all you want. I'm an ignorant bastard.
You are.
What is it?
You're an erudite man.
I have a lazy mouth. It slips around the words the way it wants to slip around the words. Anyway. I am looking forward to Carpenter's return to horror. Mm-hmm. I am looking forward to see what you... Now, that
you
brings
feel,
me up...
And now, do we have to ask ourselves, because you are the remake knowledge king...
Yes.
Is this from some Japanese or Korean Good movie question, we don't it? Know about?
Doesn't say. At this point, I don't know. That's as much as
it
I know.
It sounds quite original.
All I know, is it's starting to film next month. What I will tell you in the remake field, and this is the one that I said I'll tell you about on air, and I wouldn't tell him about it beforehand because I want his reaction live on air because I know what Jake is like. Latest remake news. Are you ready? They're remaking The Thing.
Oh, again? Oh,
this is just a...
No, but they're not just remaking the book. They're not remaking the original. They're remaking Carpenter's Thing.
Well, was that the one with Kurt Russell?
Yeah. Which is one of my favorite goddamn films of all time.
Does Carpenter have any copyright?
Probably not. It's probably owned by Universal, Lock, Stock, and Barrel. And that's the thing. What disturbs me about this story is not so much that they want to remake it. Because if they want to remake it, I can almost say, okay, it's based on Campbell's novel, Who Goes There? And if you want to make a new version of the novel, that's not technically remaking the film. That's making a new interpretation of the novel. That's a slightly different story. I don't like the idea, but, you know, you can argue that, you know, different people will interpret novels different ways. It's not remaking a film. However, at this point, there is speculation, because it's so early on in this, and we don't know all the details. But at this point, they're saying it's either a straight remake, or it's going to be a prequel to John Carpenter's 1982 Thing. Which is about...
How can it be a prequel?
Well, I'll tell you.
It's about the early
It's about the other base. Remember, they go to another base and find it all wiped out by the alien, and they pick it up and take it back with them. It's about the Norwegian base getting destroyed.
Okay.
So it's about them finding the thing.
But
in the
essentially,
first place
that's
in the
same bloody story. Just
it is.
A different base. So, I mean,
same thing, different base.
Yeah. Same thing, different cast. I'm sorry, they're going to CGI up all
Listen,
the effects.
That 1982 film, the grittiness of it.
I don't remember that film, but I do remember how lousy the Thing special effect was when it finally ooged out.
I love that stop motion piece.
Oh, I hated it.
Watch it again.
Yeah, definitely watch it again.
Watch it again.
I'll write that down as
That film has such a lasting impact on me. I own a copy on DVD. Yeah. I've watched it so many times. Yeah.
Will you lend it to me?
Rob Bottin's effects work is brilliant.
It really is frightening.
And literally so low budget that they were doing some of the effects work with bubblegum.
Yep.
You know, it's just amazing.
Another film that was just as horrifying that came out that year was The Howling. Or was that...
Oh, The Howling.
Was that 83? No, it was 82.
Rob Bottin.
Yeah, really.
Rob Bottin's work is amazing.
But I mean, what was the one that was the really ancient one, and it was the same deal, and they were in the Arctic, and... It's black and white, and it was made during the Cold War. It wasn't called The Thing, or was it that the original?
It was The Thing from Another Planet.
The Thing from Another World, or
The Thing from Another Planet. And it's actually
Is that the same novel it's based on?
And The Thing, the 1982 one, was actually technically a remake of that, but it was closer to the original novel than the original 50s version. The 50s version, 50s or 60s, maybe 50s.
It's black and white.
Look it up. Somebody's got IMDb here.
Now, talking about space horrors, let's segue here. Katrina, I have to ask you, dear, are you a virgin?
Why?
Have you seen Life Force?
Oh, no, she hasn't.
No, I haven't.
You're still a virgin.
Am I? Okay. My mother will be so pleased.
We will have to put you down in front of Life Force one day.
Put me down like a dog.
Yes.
Pretty much.
Sorry, I didn't mean to put you off kilter.
I was waiting to see where you're going. I was giving you my full and total attention.
Excellent.
Okay, so the concept of...
Life Force, it is something to behold.
I think the fact that we have brought up horror and the fact that we have brought up remakes and possibly prequels...
Yes. Oh, she's got a show.
I think it is time to talk about our feature review, because the night is getting on.
Yes, come on.
And we will start with a clip. The feature review that we're going to talk about, and last time Katrina and I got together for a feature review, what were we speaking, 42 minutes?
It was supposed to be 10 minutes, but I promise you and Jake and the viewers,
and
hello,
the
it's a bit dark, that screen, the listening audience, that I'm actually going to be brief, as is the soul
of
it.
Well, yeah, it's also a slightly different situation because we're not comparing a 1952 original to a modern remake.
I'm going to be short, sharp, and to the point.
This is a clip from the trailer of Underworld: Rise of the Lycans.
Underworld 3. Oh, God.
You are the most fearless warrior I have ever seen. But you will learn to be loyal. Without the loyalty between us, we are no better than the beasts at our door. They are the immortal damned.
Vampire and Lycan.
One. Born into privilege.
Sonya, you risk too much for a father to ignore.
I'm quite capable of looking after myself.
The other, bred for slavery.
Lucian, you are a credit to your race.
But all that is about to change.
Sonya, if I were to leave, would you come with me?
My father would hunt you down.
You have stung me with your betrayal.
I've lived by their rules my entire life. I've protected them. Envied them. And for what? To be treated like an animal.
We are not animals!
That sounds straight out of Elephant Man.
Yeah.
All right, so that was Underworld: Rise of the Lycans.
Wonderful parables going on there, obviously. Yeah.
Okay, so for the people who are listening, this is Underworld 3, as Katrina said, but they're not calling it that because it's actually a prequel. It's set 5,000 years, is that right?
Give or take
a few thousand. Set 5,000 years before the events of the first Underworld film. For those who have not seen the Underworld films, Jacob, they are basically revolve around a age-long war between Lycans, or werewolves, lycanthropes, and vampires, who were their masters, and the Lycans have revolted against them. Oh, I just hit my microphone. There you go. Okay, Katrina, take it away.
Okay. So, the story takes up, as David correctly says, before, or it's basically in the first two. I think we need to just touch on the very first Underworld was the story, and it had Kate Beckinsale, Scott Speedman, and Michael Sheen, as you would know Michael Sheen from his work in
The Queen and Frost Nixon.
That's correct. And a very good actor, a very versatile actor. So, what was
We'll come back to that because I have an issue with that as well. I love Michael Sheen, but I have an issue with the casting.
So in the first one, we actually see how the current, as you say, war between lycans and vampires is playing out.
And it's set modern day.
Modern day, so it's been going on a little while. So, and in part of that story, it's revealed that Lucien, or Michael Sheen, as the head of the lycans or werewolves, had an illicit affair with the daughter, Sonia, of the Bill Nighy character, who's Victor. Called Victor, with a K.
Victor.
Yes, and that resulted in her being popped in some sunshine and burnt alive. And that started the war.
Nasty.
Right? So we now come
back. And that's actually not a spoiler, because you actually see the flashbacks of this in the first film.
That's what I just said.
Yeah, sorry.
So we saw that. So when we come to Underworld, The Rise of the Lycans, we are basically set in very medieval times. We see the servitude of the humans to their vampire overlords. We see how the lycans are mistreated. And the special thing about Lucien is when he's born from his rather hirsute mother, he's a little baby. And they say, shall we kill him? And he goes, no, I think I'll keep him as a pet. Right.
Because he was different, because he could change at will.
That's right.
That's right. Whereas the other ones were just animals.
And they wear very special collars that have big nails in them pointing inward. So if your neck gets a bit big, if you're turning into a lycan, if you're turning into your werewolf state, then you're going to garrote yourself.
Right.
So these are these sort of servitude collars they wear.
Is there product placement by Powell or Goodos?
There should be. They missed an opportunity.
Now, I'm just going to whip through my points very quickly.
Okay.
I agree. David, I was listening to one of your earlier reviews with Jake, and you were talking about the movies having the Attack of the Blue hues.
Oh, yes.
And I felt my age. In the first time watching this movie, I just thought, can if someone just pop a light on? It was so dark.
Mm. Absolutely. In fact, it has to be said that all of the Underworld films have this blue hue, but this one is particularly dark.
But see, the nice part about the first one was, in, as you say, the gritty urban vibe in the decaying city of Prague or wherever it was shot, somewhere in the Eastern Europe, was that you'd suddenly go into bright, stark neon light. Mm. But this thing, it just was dark, and I thought, just could someone pay the light
bill? They could have shot day for night to have a nice blue effect. There's still a lot of light in it.
When you watch it, you'll be surprised. So
and the watery effects on the rocks and what have you, because it's so dark. Anyway, the fight scenes were too jerky. I'm so sick, and I could make an entire show about being sick of well-choreographed fight scenes being shot with the two jerky handhelds, and the first man that needs a very sharp smack on the back of the legs is the guy that directed the Bourne Identity. Those first fight scenes in Bourne Identity, the first one, magic. The second two, just so jerky, it was wasted.
Katrina's got a whipping cane here, and my calves are starting to feel very...
It actually dates
sensitive.
Back a little bit earlier than that, and I'll come back to that when
all right,
I,
so
I
the fight scenes were too jerky.
It is a common complaint.
I mean, over the past few years of
a lot of films.
All right, and then the blood effects people, naturally, it's a vampire film, were let off the chain, and, the blood's spurting everywhere, to the point where I had a little chuckle because it felt like the Addams Family, where they set up the kids to do the Shakespearean scene, and he set up the blood scene, and they were cutting each other, and blood's just spurting everywhere. So Michael Sheen does the whole gravitas thing very well. It was a believable love story between he and the girl.
Rona Mitra,
for those
gravitas.
Of you who...
Gravitas,
beg your pardon. See, I can be corrected.
It's wonderful.
It's a learning environment. A learning environment.
I love it.
So anyway, her spec story, for people who don't know, she's done Nip and Tuck, Boston Legal and The Practice, and never been too unhappy, and Hollow Man, as the young woman who gets attacked, to pop her clothes off. But what's funny about...
Although what we were talking about before we went to air was the fact that she doesn't seem to take her clothes off
anymore.
I know,
but that's my point about the love scene.
Yeah.
Can I talk about that?
Sure, sure.
Is that all right? Because what happens is I'll sit back here. No, I want you to...
Shut up, David.
No, the thing is, right, there's a very good love scene and it's all a bit Mandingo. She can't be in love with him because he's the slave, And, he's heading for their assignation. He's very grimy. He's running through the little tunnels. And he's going to get some. So he's running, and he's very grimy because he's a slave. And he meets her, and there she is all pristine and white because, one, she's a vampire, and two, she's quite clean. And suddenly they make love. She's not grimy. Where did the grime go? And he's not grimy. So unless there's a little shower somewhere behind the towers...
A douche.
That's right, the correct French word.
Mm. It might have been some of that watery effect that's running on the walls.
Maybe.
There you go.
And they make love, and so after the post-coital, glow, she's lying side-lying, and the little elbow is and the arm is very queely, covering
strategically
placed any nipple work. So David and I were discussing with Jake earlier. It's interesting for a girl who was quite happy to get a kit off, suddenly, no.
I have a question. Well, maybe a suggestion. That is, that they're going for a wide target audience.
That's what I wondered too. With a bit of ratings issue.
No,
because once you reach a certain point in your ratings, I mean, the film is rated R in the States. It's rated MA here.
So if you have 8 buckets of blood, it doesn't matter if you show a bosom.
No, it's not going to change your rating to show a nipple.
Really?
Not at this point.
But it might. It might increase your audience size.
A haphazard buttock.
Are you kidding? The film this is aimed at, the age that this film is aimed at, is squarely 16 to 25.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
They want to see a nipple.
Yeah.
Well, they're not getting it. They're just getting buckets of blood. Okay.
She probably wants to get more serious. I
think,
don't know.
Yes, I think you're right. Yeah, she's going for the serious thing. All right. So I thought it was a believable love story. I think he did a good job. We had the predictable Braveheart in the dungeon freedom speech. I think it's very hard for an actor these days to do it. I'm going to whip you up for battle speech and not be compared with the whole, and we want our freedom.
Absolutely. Yes. I think Mel Gibson has ruined that for everybody.
Well, I tell you who ruined something else, another genre speech for other people, and that was Viggo Mortensen from the Lord of the Rings trilogy when he does the whole and not this day speech and he's riding up and down in front of the battle people.
Oh, yeah.
And then if you compare that, and I know I'm going off track because unfortunately I do, with Kingdom of Heaven and poor little Orlando going, let's fight and we're going to be, let's do it. Come on, guys.
Oh, you did it so well.
Just, I thought, oh, someone donate a testicle, which is another side issue I'll talk about later. Okay, so first off, I can't understand. That's a spoiler. It's the health background. Do you want to do the spoiler about Victor?
Let's not do spoilers. Too new a film.
I won't do spoilers. All right. So then that's all I have to say about it. I really enjoyed it. I thought it rattled along.
Yes.
I thought any of the little boo-boo bits and the inconsistencies were easy to shrug off. I thought it was a very adequate prequel. And I know you don't give scores, but I would give it 3.5 out of 5. I thought it was enjoyable. I wasn't looking at my watch. If they'd turned on a few more lights, I'd have been happy. But when you're ready to have a talk about that, I was going to talk about the whole backstory.
I'm impressed, Katrina. I'm impressed. You give good analysis.
Thank you.
She does, but I'm going to contradict her on some of them.
Nice.
Okay. All right. First of all, I had a problem with Michael Sheen. Not his acting. I thought his acting was fabulous. In fact, he gave the best performance in the film.
Yes.
The problem I had was this is set 5,000 years previous to the first film. In the first film, Lucien, or however you want to pronounce his name, is actually quite a weedy guy. And how do I know this? Because as soon as I finished watching this film, I went straight home and I watched the first Underworld again. And he's actually got quite gaunt cheeks and he's quite weedy and he wears a coat the whole time and his hair looks kind of
like... If you don't work out for 5,000 years, you are going to lose muscle tone.
My point is they're supposed to be immortal. He says that to somebody. He actually says, I will make you immortal. They are immortal. He is not supposed to age. And yet... He is in the first film, Nick Tatopoulos, who directed this film, has obviously had him go to the gym. Patrick Tatopoulos. Patrick Tatopoulos has obviously made him go to the gym. He does a lot of the film with his shirt off, and he's all buffed up, and he looks fantastic.
Yeah.
But that doesn't fit the continuity of the next film. Because in the next film, he's looking kind of gaunt and kind of weedy. And you sit there and go, I'm sorry, 5,000 years and you're immortal, this doesn't look right.
I have a theory.
Oh, you have a theory?
Black people like to try and make themselves look
white. He's white.
No, listen to me.
Oh, okay.
Hear me out. Black people try and make themselves look white. White people, particularly in summer, try and make themselves look black. Immortal people try and make themselves look a bit old because they're always...
But he gets younger.
Oh.
Because,
there's a factor
of time here. And the factor of time is that there is a 5-year gap between making the prequel and making the first one. And so, of course, he's actually, in the first one, he's younger than he is in the prequel, which, as is Bill Nighy.
Yeah.
Which is another factor altogether.
But Bill Nighy looks undead anyway, so I think he's got a head start.
Now, Bill Nighy, I love. I love. But I thought...
Remind the listeners again about Bill Nighy.
Bill Nighy he really, really, really exploded onto the screen, funnily enough, well late in his career. Because he had been kicking around doing things like Still Crazy and stuff like that for years and years and years. But it wasn't until he did Love Actually a few years ago. And everybody went, who the hell's this guy? And they fell... And now he shows up in almost everything. In fact, he's in Valkyrie. That's just opened with Tom Cruise. He's one of the Nazis in that.
Let's go and see it, Dave.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm curious to see it. I think Tom's going to be embarrassing.
Let's go and see it.
Well, Mirren did a beautiful review of it.
She hasn't even seen it.
Oh, I thought she was talking about his accent work. I thought she.
No, she's seen the trailer. From the trailer, she's looking at the trailer.
She's so vehement. I thought she'd seen it.
Well, Mirren is a dialect coach.
I know, and she was brilliant.
To look at that trailer, you sit and go, it doesn't matter if they're doing German accents. In fact, that would be quite silly. That's quite Hogan's Heroes, but.
Hogan.
They all have to match if they're all going to be of the same
Ten
nationality.
10 days in the cooler.
And so what Bryan Singer has done is he's cast all of these esteemed British actors as the Nazis and then thrown Tom Cruise in.
I know, because I love Mirren's statement in Geek Actually, which she says, and I was waiting him to finish the sentence with, Dude.
It just doesn't look right at all. Anyway, that's off
meanwhile,
the track.
Meanwhile, back at Underworld.
Back to Underworld. Like you, I am an Underworld geek. All right. Now, I did a little bit of a look around, and I actually found out that on RottenTomatoes.com, which I love Rotten Tomatoes, I go there all the time. If you haven't been to Rotten Tomatoes, basically what it does is it compiles all the reviews that have been given to a film and gives it a tomato meter rating from rotten to ripe, and basically gives an average review of all the different reviews. So you get an idea from, 200 reviewers,
right,
kind of where the general consensus is. And even the first Underworld sits at 30% on Rotten Tomatoes. It was not a critical darling. None of them were. And in fact, Rise of the Lycans goes down a little bit lower, but it's not that much lower than the first one. So overall, it kind of fits into the same whole category. But if you liked Underworld, then there's not much not to like about Underworld Rise of the Lycans. I think if you don't like the Underworld films, it's not going to pick up any new fans.
Can I say something that really surprised me when I went back and watched 1 and 2?
Yep.
One was as I expected it to be, and she did the whole robotic thing. And obviously I always watch the special... Special features to see what actors are saying about the process, and then you watch it between that. And then I watched the second one, and what was interesting was when the second one came out, I was very disappointed with it. I thought, oh man,
I agree. I think the second one is actually a weak film.
But on the second viewing, when you go 1, 2 straight away, Obviously number 2 starts about 10 minutes after number 1 finishes, because it's straight after the action of number 1 finishes. And when you get that segue, it held up a lot better than the very first viewing I had.
I could agree with that. I think it does work better as a double feature. I don't think it works well as a standalone.
No.
I don't think it's as a strong a film. It's a lot slower moving, in fact, than the first one. I love the first Underworld. It just really tickled me. In fact, I really like Kate Beckinsale in all her leathers and, shooting out the floor with her gun, which is a very Snake Plissken Escape from New York move. And it's just wonderful stuff. It's just wonderful geek stuff, right? And I just felt with Rise of the Lycans, I thought, it's okay. It was worthwhile. It was fun to watch. And I mean, the overwhelming question I came away with it was, why? We didn't need it in any way, shape, or form. We've already got the backstory in the first film with the flashbacks.
Which he had to fight for.
But we didn't...
The director had to fight to keep that
true.
In. And they had to do it on a $1.10 budget, to get that little bit in. And as he said, you hung the whole emotional arc on that moment.
Yeah.
And again, back to Michael Sheen's wonderful acting. At the time, he said, he literally has got 3 lines. We were born into servitude... and the sad little look away, and it's all happening behind the eyes, and he basically said, and I took a vampire as my bride, and magic. And if you have that little scene in there, it just hangs it together.
Absolutely. And the problem was that little scene, which was so powerful in Underworld, was diluted in the prequel. Because we've dragged it out, and we've dragged out the whole story, and because we already kind of know what's going to happen, there's not a lot of dramatic impact.
Yes, but that's like saying don't see Shakespeare because you know what's going to happen.
It sounds like you've stretched it to try and cash in.
Yeah, and I just felt, overall. I just felt that there was a big question mark on the film. It was a big question mark in the sense of just why was it made? Mm. Was it necessary?
Can I ask you,
would actually rather have seen more Underworld.
I don't think there was a lot of places to go.
They can always find somewhere to go, Katrina.
By the end of the second one, I thought, yeah, that'll do, pig. Come on. Yeah.
In fact, I would actually go one step further and say that I don't think they needed another Underworld film.
I think
1 and 2, done.
I have a question for both of you. I am not normally a fan of this genre of film, but I am a huge fan of HBO's True Blood.
Haven't seen it. Saw the posters going up around Sydney.
Oh, Katrina.
Please,
I beg of you. I am awaiting the new third season.
Second,
I beg your pardon. Second season. I'm waiting the third season of Mad Men. No, second season of True Blood. I'm going to ask you, David, you've seen True Blood? Would I be a fan of Underworld?
No.
Right.
No, it's more...
Underworld is two-dimensional. No, Underworld is... it's a lovely two-dimensional.
It is an absolute two-dimensional comic book, and it is much more in the vein of The Matrix than it is of True Blood.
Mm.
It's much more of that Matrix-esque cool.
Don't start me on Matrix. Can I just go back...
Mickey Rourke's... Angel
Heart?
No, the graphic novel...
Sin City.
Sin City
is a better film.
Sin City has more depth behind
but
it.
That, oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. No. It's as I say, the closest cousin that you could come would be something like The Matrix, the Matrix series. It's a kind of long coats, diffuse color.
Well, you see it on the cover of the DVD.
Slow motion work, you know, and all that sort of stuff. It's very, you can see where its influence
comes from.
You don't
have to switch your brain on.
No. Now, a couple of things. You mentioned the fight scenes.
Yes.
That was actually one of my biggest criticisms of this film, was the fact that I felt that Patrick Tatopoulos had no idea how to shoot this film. He is, for those who don't know, a creature creator. He was the man who created the effects work for the first two Underworld films, and he's been given his directorial shot, basically, to do this.
Well, he has four directing credits under his belt.
Yeah, but how many of those are shorts?
No, well, two, Angel Hair is in pre-production now for 2010, and Yellow Rose of Savona is in pre-production for 2010. And in 2000, he did Bird of Passage. I don't know what that's about. And then he has 17 special effects production credits.
Exactly. He's mostly special effects. He's been given his big shot at this. He's overall crafted an okay film. But the biggest problem I had with this film was in its big epic battle sequences. And these... We're talking fairly big, epic battle sequences. Scott, he shoots too close. This is a trend at the moment, and he's obviously said, let's, you know, follow that trend, but not knowing how to do it. Now, Paul Greengrass, who shot the second Bourne film, not the first Bourne film, the second Bourne film, was probably the master of this technique.
Of the stupid technique.
Well, I thought it was actually quite effective in that film. I thought it was taken too far in the third film. I thought it was taken way too far in Eagle Eye, which came later. Everybody's adopting this technique of super fast cutting and keeping it all really tight. The problem is, unless you are really careful, you lose track of what's going on.
What?
Now, the biggest problem I had with him was that he obviously wasn't shooting enough footage, and he didn't know how to cut it all. When somebody shoots that close up, basically what they're saying is, if I just cut fast enough and in as many close-ups as possible,
I'm injecting drama,
people don't
action.
Know that I'm really don't know what I'm doing, right? And so what you've got with these action scenes is they go running into each other, and then suddenly it's a flash of swords and arms and hands and legs and feet, and you go, what the hell's going on? And in fact...
spurting blood.
There's
don't
one
forget the spurting,
and spurting blood.
Blood.
And there's one
it's
shot...
It's a put-off. It's a real put-off.
Yeah, and there's one shot in the trailer which is such an Underworld shot, and I waited the whole film for it, where she jumps off the ground, and it's shot from above, and you see her flip completely upside down, her leg kicking out, and so forth. And so... Of course, the conclusion of this shot is you expect in the film to see the rest of that. In the trailer, you just see her in midair like that, and you go, wow, that's going to be really hot in the movie. Well, I hate to break it to you, but it's not hot in the movie, because in the movie, you don't see her take off the ground, you don't see her land. It's just an insert dropped into the middle of the fight, and you sit there and go,
but didn't
she land
on
that wall?
You know? And that's when she took her father on? Or was it when she cut that guy's head?
No, she's actually fighting like three guys at the same time.
Oh, because then the other one she whipped back.
In this particular scene, you
so
see
this
here,
broke your suspension of disbelief?
It does, because you sit there and you go...
But on the other hand, this is
I don't have enough footage.
It's a two-dimensional film. It's complete fluff.
But do you know what?
You buy it.
Do you know what, though? Martial art films are a two-dimensional art form. Martial arts films, you sit there... I'm talking about the true Asian martial art films, right? And you sit there and you go, what makes those... So what made them so popular, what made them so special, was the fact that those fight scenes, if you watch the really classic Jet Li or the really classic Jackie Chan films, he shoots wide, and you can see the action going on. And why? Because they never faked it.
That's right, and they didn't fiddle with the speed.
That's right.
But the thing is, I think what you're saying is accurate. It's not about the fact that it's a two-dimensional film. You have got to go in there, and your tongue has got to remain out of your cheek. You've got to do it as if you mean it all the way through. Play it straight all the way through. And if you're a vampire, you can flip around.
Sure, I have no problem with the vampire flipping around.
But you're right, you need it to be wide.
But you need to be wide, you need to see. You need to see the entire movement. Otherwise, it's just a shot.
Yeah.
Filmmaking is about juxtaposition of shots. We have one shot that leads to another shot that leads to another shot, and they tell a story. If you just throw randomly a whole bunch of shots together, that's not juxtaposition of shots. That's just a random collection of photographs.
Now, can I just go sideways for a second and talk about the genealogy of this series and get your opinion about it.
Genealogy. Sorry.
And that next sound you will be hear will be slapping. Ah! So Len Wiseman directed one.
And two.
Yep. And was credited with story and screenplay development. Kevin Grevioux, Grevioux, was the character Ray's, and he is a large man who is one of the lichens.
And he talks like this.
He's got about 12 testicles, by my count. That guy.
He literally talks like this.
He does. No,
and each one of them is a member of the Screen Actors Guild.
That's right. They're all paying.
And he's
paying.
A big man.
He's a giant man. And he's not a bad actor. Anyway, he was originally one of the story writers on number one, right?
Yes, he was.
So he was the faithful retainer, effectively, of Lucien. And very, you know, not bad acting. And I looked at his work on IMDb and, you know, often plays the bodyguard, you know, the thug. I don't think he played the Chinbolian in MIB2. The Chinbolian.
Oh, right. Really big.
When they were having the fight scene after they were trying to give Tommy Lee Jones his memory back. I looked it up. Anyway.
Okay.
So it seemed very
chaos.
It's
been a while since I've seen MA2, so.
It all sits in my brain. Anyway, so the bottom line is he was credited with story writing the first one, and suddenly number two, you know, he's gone, that's fine.
But he is still listed as character created by.
Yeah, but you've got to dig in the credits for the second one. I puddled through. I thought, Unworld 2.
Oh, yes.
And yet he developed these original characters with Danny McBride and Len Wiseman. So Len Wiseman directs.
It's a very personal project, isn't it?
It's very personal. But and then suddenly he reappears in three. So it's very.
That's actually not a really unusual thing in filmmaking. If he didn't actually actively develop the story for the second film, then he won't be given a story credit. But, you know, he would still be credited as. I mean, he's still credited as characters created by. But if you look, the writing credits on the second film were just Danny McBride. So obviously everybody was doing something, and they've ushered him in as written by. So.
Well, I'm obviously being paranoid because I felt poor. I felt Kevin was shoved to the side.
I don't think he was because he was thrown a bone.
I use that word literally because he's a werewolf.
I don't think he did because he did come back and do the story and help with the third one.
So yes, and as you say, then the mantle of director was given to Patrick Totopoulos,
which was the biggest mistake of this film. But unfortunately, Len Wiseman has gone off to bigger pastures, so to speak, because he's gone wider pastures because he went off and directed Die Hard 4. So he was given much more money and a career in America
and blow more shit up.
That's right.
Well, there needs to be an official category, you know, Katrina. Yeah,
blow shit up.
Yeah.
That's right. Now.
Absolutely. So,
are you happy with that?
I think the final say on that film is that it was okay. I didn't mind it. I watched it. I thought it was kind of fun. I did have a problem with a continuity error, which even you picked up, which was in the flashbacks of Underworld. The daughter is blonde, and then in the prequel, she's played by Rona Mitra with long black hair.
Can you reiterate that in the original
Underworld,
you said they had the little flashback that shows the event of
the daughter being killed.
Yes.
And she's this pretty blonde girl.
Yes.
Because obviously Rona Mitra wasn't cast.
Sonya.
Yeah.
Then, when they've come 5 years later and made the prequel, they've cast Rona Mitra in the role.
And they didn't put a rinse through her hair.
And they didn't put a rinse through her hair, so she's got long, dark hair. Yeah. And you sit there and go, and so when she's tied to the post and she's...
It just stuck out like a sore thumb, didn't it?
I went, there's something wrong here.
You know? What do they call a blonde who dyes her hair brunette?
Artificial intelligence. I had to think about that for a second. Yep. All right, so overall, I thought it was okay. I actually kind of missed Kate Beckinsale because she really was Underworld to me. She really was kind of the series.
Man, she had played that little tune out. There was no more. She was over it. You watch the special features in the second one, and you listen to what she says. You watch her face. You read between the lines, and you will see she's going, I know I married the director, but I'm over this.
Yeah. Two interesting pieces of trivia about this. I don't know what you've read or seen or heard, but the two little bits of trivia that caught my attention on the Underworld films in general. First one is actually about the first Underworld, which is where Kate Beckinsale said that Len Wiseman used to like her to wear the costume into the bedroom, the latex suit. So that was kind of fun. And the other piece of trivia I thought was very interesting was apparently when Rona Mitra was approached to play Sonya, she turned it down. And she actually turned it down because she said that she wasn't going to take over the role made by another actress. And she had too much respect for Kate Beckinsale to basically step in and be the female lead in an Underworld film.
Yeah.
The director had to go to her and meet with her and say, no, 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 you're not playing the Kate Beckinsale character. You're actually playing a completely different character, and you're playing Sonya, and you're not actually trying to just step into another actor's shoes. And that's when she agreed to do it. And I have great respect for Rhona Mitra for actually doing that, for actually saying, no, I won't just take over somebody else's role.
That's right. You know? Cover up those nipples, girl.
I don't have respect for the fact she doesn't seem to be taking her clothes off anymore.
There, there. Now, do you want me to talk about my other film?
Yes, please.
Can you cope, Jake?
Unfortunately, I didn't set up a clip for this one.
Okay.
While you're reviewing, I'll see if I can find the clip.
All right. What film's this?
Marley and Me.
Oh, yes.
Which could be called chick flickish.
Yes.
But basically, it's
based on a book?
Based on a book by a columnist who used to document his life and basically the misdeeds of his dog, which was a very naughty, and as anyone who knows Labradors will know, are naughty.
They're so cute.
They are so cute. Okay, so
even when they're older, they're cute.
They are. But in a nutshell, I found there was no chemistry between the leads, being Jennifer Aniston and Owen Wilson.
Mm.
Jennifer Aniston's face does not move for the first two-thirds of the film. She's a little bit in shade at the beginning, like there's a lot of shadow work over the face, and I thought, you stupid, stupid girl. It takes till two-thirds of the film for the little muscles between her eyes to just squeeze those eyebrows in, and the top lip section's just not moving at all.
Botoxing, yeah?
Botox and possibly a bit of cheek work. I don't know. We'll see what you feel.
But what's interesting is when I saw the trailer, I actually thought, no, she's just getting older. But Mirren actually said that. Mirren actually said she's had work done.
And the correct phrase is they've fooled with their face. Right. So
I say kudos to Mirren for spotting that on the trailer. I think that's
she's
amazing.
She's good. Now, the big thing is, as we all know, Jennifer Aniston is a wonderful actress and she can turn her emotions on a dime.
Yep.
And I have a lot of respect for that. There's one scene where literally a look just goes across her eyes. It's a very upsetting scene between her and Owen Wilson, and I won't do a spoiler on that. It's where she really, you know, pulls out the chops.
Mm.
But really, other than that, she feels like a cold piece the whole way through. You don't believe she loves him in a big way. You don't believe that she loves the kids. It's all very, and it's one of that typical thing. If you see someone hug a child, the kid's back there, you know, well away. People don't get in to have a cuddle. And it's like she's going through the motions. They supposedly end up having 3 children.
I blame the director in that situation.
Well, yes, not getting her to have rapport with the children.
I blame the director, honestly, because the director should pick up on that straight away and go, excuse me, I don't believe you. Please hug the child.
Well, no, she has to work with the child, you know, off camera so that the child has trust in her.
But what I'm saying, that's a directorial issue.
Totally, I agree. And my mother was an actor, and she used to do lots of grandmother roles, and she would talk to the child and create rapport beforehand, and that would come out. So in a nutshell, the dog, the whole vignettes about the dog, the dog's so naughty and destructive. There's only one vignette where you see the dog put its head on one of their thighs, and you think, yeah, that you could love this dog. There was no balance between the naughtiness and the destructiveness of the dog and this whole, it's keeping everyone awake, it's ripping up the furniture.
No contrast.
Man, I'd have been for, you know, to the trip to the RSPCA, two go out, one comes back. You know, there was no loving this dog. It didn't let you allow to love the dog. And then when things unfold in the dog's life, as you would expect, you are actually only crying about your own pet. Everybody in the theatre was crying. I was crying. I didn't have enough tissues. My friend was crying. People were going,
you're living
in the background.
viscerally through this.
You are just thinking about a pet you lost. Yeah. And if you want to go and cry about your own pet, cool, do it. But this film is not going to let you buy into the whole Marley thing, unless you particularly had a Labrador that you loved.
This is very clever.
And Alan Arkin, as the editor that's looking after Owen Wilson, beautiful, understated role. It was a little bit reminiscent of So I Married an Ex-Murderer as the police chief that, what's the Australian actor? Anthony LaPaglia kept asking him to be more aggressive. But Alan Arkin just made it for me. And then Owen Wilson is the frustrated journalist who wants to be a reporter, and his high-profile reporter friend is that guy from Private Practice that has very strange facial hair. When you look it up, it's just odd. It's just so geometrical. He's just gone a little bit strange. It's like, I'm not sure. What was that weird guy out of the cartoon, Brenda Starr, had a little thin moustache?
Oh,
he's a bit of that. You look,
played by the ex-James Bond guy in the film version.
Lazenby.
No. Timothy Dalton.
That's what I meant, sorry.
Yeah, Timothy Dalton. So, Brenda Starr played by Brooke Shields.
Yes. So the kids are very good, as, you know, their reaction to the dog's illness, brilliant, really well done. But I'm telling you, take your tissues, but you are actually not crying for anybody on the screen.
That's interesting because I actually spoke to somebody. I haven't seen the film, and I'm going to play. I've rounded up the trailer now, and if it is the same trailer that I've seen before, now I've lost.
While you're doing that, can I just put this to you, Katrina? That this film has been fashioned deliberately in this way that the audience lives viscerally through the pet. I mean, they're thinking about their own pet, and
there's a moment
they don't want a connection.
They've done it as like a separation so that you just do have broad brushstrokes?
It sounds that way.
But, okay.
So that you transport yourself or you project yourself into each of the characters.
What I was about to say, though, what I think is very interesting is the fact that the trailer, which I've rounded
transpose is the word I'm looking for.
And I'll play the trailer now. The trailer plays it as if it's just a comedy.
Yes, it does.
Plays it as a broad comedy. Now, you're not the first person that I've spoken to who has said that this film is actually a tearjerker. And that it's quite funny for the first half and then just turns tragic and throughout most of the film.
No, it isn't tragic. It almost is a totally... I haven't seen it yet, but if you look at Revolution Road and you see the angst of the suburban life, take that and water it down by about 1,000 and add a dog. You know, it's their life and the frustration. He only gets the dog because she wants to have a baby and he wants to put that off because he wants to pursue the big reporter lifestyle with his friend with the strange facial hair that he sees him, right. You know, going off and doing, you know, talking to Pablo Escobar and Oleski. So in a nutshell, it's this sort of, my life's a bit frustrating, but oh, look, the dog's a bit hard, but I'm writing about it. So see, I really do love my life. It's one of these things. It's like a little insipid... Too watered down cordial. What's the American version of cordial?
Kool-Aid.
It is your Kool-Aid and it's too watered down. I'll let you play a scene and then I'll say one more thing.
This is a little bit of the trailer. Now, I'm assuming it's a trailer I've seen, so it's pretty broad and it just give you a taste of it.
There's nothing like the experience of raising your first dog. Of course, that kid's not even me. That's me. And that crazy hound I'm chasing is Marley, the world's worst dog.
Sorry!
But our story begins before Marley was born.
Dream house. Paint a Barney on the wall and you have a great little playroom. You guys are going to have kids, right?
Yes.
You want my advice? Get a puppy or something.
I've never had a dog.
There's nothing to
it. It's the man. That's the man with the strange facial hair.
This Christmas,
I know
get ready for a surprise.
One, two, three.
They're adorable. Hi, puppy.
And there's a whole area of puppies.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, so I look at that trailer and I go, and we actually watch the trailer, my wife and Nicholas and I actually watch the trailer, and we go, oh, that looks cute, we'll go see that. And then I speak to a friend of Nicholas's, his parents, and they go, don't go see that. You know, it's like because they took their son, who was Nicholas's age, apparently he cried.
People had kids at this thing, and I thought, bad move. No. You know, you might as well take him to Freddy Krueger.
Look how misleading this trailer is.
Yeah, that's not good.
And they, you know, that puppy, first scene where he jumps with the dog, where he runs past the kid in the field of wheat or whatever, that never occurs. Shopping There's a trailer. Similar scene, but it is actually not occurring in the film.
Okay, so overall, though, what would you say? Would you say is it worth seeing at all? Or would you just say wait for DVD and...
Wait for DVD when you've done your little cockatoo head looking along the DVD rack and there's not a lot else there. No, it's okay, but really there's just a couple of moments. I think Owen Wilson still needs a little bit of a holiday.
I think so.
And I think Jennifer Aniston needs to let the swelling go down in her face and have a long, hard little think about herself.
Okay, on that note, we might wrap this up.
I think so. But having said that, have you been in the room whilst Mirren has been here, like the three of you?
No, never. Katrina hasn't been done a show with okay. Mirren yet.
I think it could turn...
I think it'll be fabulous.
I want to see it.
All right.
I want to see it.
We will shelve that for another show. In the meantime, I want to thank you very much for coming, Katrina.
Thank you for having me.
I know
me.
It's kind of late and you got a bit of a long drive ahead of you, so thank you very much for giving me your evening. And thank you very much, Jacob, and I'm thank so glad you. You're back.
I'm glad to be back, and I'm glad that Katrina is here. I heard her through in a couple of shows ago, and a wonderful addition to Geek Actually.
Absolutely. Thank you. And we are trying to work out a schedule to try and get Holly back. So if Holly's listening, we are trying to get you back,
Holly. Hello, Holly.
So we will try and get you back as well. In the meantime, I want all of our listeners to go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we will talk to you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
How are you going to edit that?
I'm not. I do very little editing to my shows.
Very little.
I pump them out. I look for anything obvious, like, you know, if there's somebody farting on the microphone or something. But, you know, otherwise, it's just chit-chat.